Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. Tonight, food and drink. As Shakespeare said, drink provokes the desire, but takes away the performance. Food means different things to different people, too. To a South Sea Islander, coconuts are part of his diet. To a sound effects man on the Archers, they're an approaching horse. To the child, a custard pie is a pudding. But to the comedian, it's bread and butter. Gluttony is the one sin that nobody telephones the BBC about. Though a waiter, what the, you did. though a waiter was fired last night by the management of a Shepherd's Bush restaurant for serving pornographic alphabet soup. Send in a postcard and we'll know what it was. And in the West End, a new toothpaste went on the market today with food particles in it. It's for people who don't have time to eat between brushings. And as a result of long research, scientists have now perfected a breakfast cereal that you feed to children and it takes all their energy away. There's no doubt about it, there's growing variety in the food available today.
Would you care to order, sir?
Oh, thank you.
Madam?
Thank you. You go ahead, please.
Oh, fine. I think I'll begin with a little Dubrovnik caviar with just a twist of lemon. Then the lobster without dressing, please, but covered with a mixture of mushrooms and onions, the way the chef knows I like it. Then a small venison steak, sealed on one side only, with side helpings of salad lettuce and cubed beetroot, raw, of course. After that, the cube Jacques and a small cup of Brazilian coffee, not the Cuban, and a glass of Courvoisier 21.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. And madam?
I'll have a plain omelette.
Sounds rather nice. Do you mind if I change?
Of course, the traditional standard of cooking we used to associate with the British was that of the guest house at a certain unnamed seaside resort famous for its Blackpool Rock. Clacton, where the landladies traditionally ask as they serve the gravy, one lump or two. That's how it used to be. France had Escoffier, Britain had King Alfred. Both cuisines seemed to belong to a pampered foreign way of life, obsessed with trivialities like food and art and sex. But after Suez and all that, it dawned on the British that they had no need to be badly fed anymore. If they couldn't be great, then at least they could start enjoying their food. Even the service improved. I was at a restaurant just by the studio yesterday. A woman at the next table ordered tongue. But when it arrived, she took one look at it and said, "Tongue? Tongue? I could never eat anything that came out of an animal's mouth." So the waiter took it away and brought her a boiled egg. That's waiters for you. Sometimes careless, sometimes on the other hand showing a fatherly, almost excessive, quite infuriating concern.
A waiter, could I have the baked jam roll, please?
Not till you've finished your cabbage.
According to the world of the television commercials, of course, food seems to achieve the same status as illicit sex. A Butter Osborne munched furtively in the back of the car, or a crafty tin of beans on toast snatched hastily while the wife's at her mother's. We've become a nation of people who can't tell stalk from butter, or as we used to call them, chalk from cheese, or idiots. And let's face it, as we all know, Oedipus committed suicide when he found that mother's pride was just an old loaf of bread. There's nothing wrong with bread. Oh, no.
Make me a ham sandwich.
Right.
Cafe society. Then there's that nasty trip of... Trick, of course, nasty trip. That's holidays. A nasty trick that the wimpy have of in their places of making you feel inferior. I mean, once you've been forced to say humiliating things like, I would like a chocolate-coloured flavoured whipsy with a giant economy boodle burger. your dignity's gone forever. But that's nowhere near as bad as one somewhat unhygienic roadside cafe in Surrey. I mean, it's gratifying to see a waiter wipe his hands clean, but not on your sandwich. Though it's much easier, of course, with drink. Public houses offer a wide variety of fare.
Could I have a large whiskey and dry ginger, please? Two gin and lemons, two gin and limes, a vodka and tomato juice, a brandy, a rum and pep, three light ales, four brown ales, and 8 pints of best bitter, and a bill. And the whole bill by the street.
Or as one defendant said in a court case when he was being charged for being drunk and disorderly, it wasn't the drink, Your Honour, it was the fresh air. Someone trying to impress his companion at Ray Park's the other night ordered a Chateau Mouton Rothschild 47, and when they hadn't got any, asked for two of the 23 and a halves. Or as W.C. Fields once said, there isn't a drinker in the world who can hold a candle to me. If he did, there'd be a god-awful explosion. Though, of course, it isn't only heavy drinkers who sometimes find it difficult to get served.
Could I have an ice cream, please?
Excuse me, sir, are you Jewish?
Yes, I am, sir, matter of fact, but what's that got to do with it?
No, sorry, sir, we don't serve Jews with ice cream.
Well, I think that's absolutely disgraceful. Could I see the manager?
If you insist. Mr. Cowan!
What seems to be the matter?
This lady has just refused to serve me with ice cream because I'm Jewish.
That's correct.
And you're Mr. Cowan?
Yes.
Well, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. You, of all people, refusing to serve Jews with ice cream.
Have you tasted our ice cream?
Mr. John Cleese is now appearing at the Yiddish Theatre. At least giving up ice cream might help you to slim. Someone sent round a circular this week saying, how would you like to lose 28 pounds of unsightly fat? Cut your head off. And of course, people's concern with diets has helped places like the steakhouses to revolutionise the cutlery business and bring to the masses a new and wider appreciation of vintage car table mats. But in spite of them, most of our restaurants still sound, at least predominantly, foreign. If you were to name a restaurant after onion soup or a snail like the escargot, why can't you name it after a good old English dish? Wine and dine at the Brussels sprout. Meet your friends at the bread pudding. After the theatre, why not rendezvous at the chip butty? Stewed prune. Of course, our roving reporters have definite views on food too. Before asking them, I asked what they disliked first.
What things do you hate eating?
Curry.
You hate curry? Why do you hate curry?
Well, it's a lot. I don't really like sausages. I don't like vinegar.
Why don't you like vinegar?
My mummy said I can't have it.
I like mushrooms and cockles and all that lot and heels.
What do you like to eat?
Chuck ices and oysters and Guinness and beer.
Jam, syrup,
shandy,
ice cream, chips, fish, spaghetti.
How would you make spaghetti if you had to?
I would cut worms up.
the diet of worms, though his problem wasn't as great as that of a vegetarian who got a black eye and had to put a nut rissole on it. Very uncomfortable. And his problem wasn't as great as the problem we have every time that we decide to take our food and our drink in that most uncomfortable and unnatural of ways at the cocktail party.
Oh, Frank. Frank, I'd like you to meet Henry Bates. Bates, this is Sir Francis Wenlock Smythe Wrighton.
What did you say your name was?
Henry Bates. It's been awfully rainy recently, hasn't it? Sir Francis Wenlock Smythe Wrighton.
I'm awfully sorry, but I've been in Bermuda for 6 months. I'm a chairman of ICI, head of Shell, and director of 17 holding companies, and I spent 12 months in a Japanese prisoner of war camp from which I escaped 18 times. So what do you do?
Well, I'm mainly sort of potter about.
Really? What did you say your name was?
Henry Bates.
Really? You're a very small person, aren't you? Do you by any chance know Sir Montagu Wolfe Banks?
Well, I'm not terribly well.
Yeah. He's an extremely tall person. Of course, the Japanese are very small too, aren't they? Are you Japanese at all? No, I'm sure you're not. You don't look very Japanese. Well, it's been awfully interesting talking to you about all these fascinating things you've been doing. What did you say your name was?
Henry Bates!
Extraordinary people, these Japanese.
Cocktail conversation. Of course, we mustn't forget that a great many people think of food as an aphrodisiac. A lot of people swear by oysters, though the man who really depends on those has to face the fact that he's going to have a pretty barren time of it whenever there's an R in the month. And it's a verifiable fact that in France, trifle is considered an aphrodisiac. I've heard of Bird's instant whip, but this is ridiculous. And of course, more than almost any other, the language of menus never says what it means. For instance,
Scotch broth,
watered down minestrone.
Minestrone,
watered down Scotch broth.
Clear soup,
water. Watered down.
Rich, succulent, farm fresh, dawn gathered, dew drenched, sun kissed.
Frozen.
Frozen.
Tinned.
From the Garden of England, Royal King Edward potatoes, dug from the rich soil of Kent and deep fried in sizzling olive oil.
Chips.
A tangy, elusive vanilla sauce, made from a secret centuries-old recipe of hooded monks.
Custard. And remember, never criticize a chef. He may cry and rust the tin opener. And whatever you may think, it's not a good idea to call the head waiter over and say, "My compliments to the refrigerator." Not even in those very expensive continental restaurants where your food is cooked in front of you and your bill is cooked behind you. And why on earth do they put the holes in that Gruyere cheese when it's the Gorgonzola that needs the ventilation? There's no doubt that this new look to English food has come a long way. Why, even traditional figures like Philip Harbin and Fanny Craddock are having to find new ways of presenting their culinary advice.
Off the lid, and in with the chosen bands. I have chosen big bands, so here they go.
Eggs, garlic, what more can you want? finest appetizer of the world.
When you put bones in, you add cold water.
It's a steak, kidney, mushroom and oyster pudding. A really wonderful thing.
Really, really wonderful thing.
Well, the oyster pudding should be done now. Yes, it's done now. Done to a turn now.
Done to a turn, done to a turn.
Oh, look at that. Oh, the smell.
It's a good idea to put a pound and a half more cauliflower.
But this is a cabbage. This is a cabbage the way the gardener grew it.
But you can't pick it up.
And it tastes just like wet hay.
No.
And we in Britain, we in wet.
Mr. Ronnie Corbett and the Russian Women's Athletes Male Voice Choir. Cannibals, of course, have a different attitude to food. While we're reading Which, they're reading Who's Who. On ship, while we're reading the menu, they're consulting the passenger list. Though at least I suppose you know where you are more than you do today in those new dimly lit restaurants that are part of the new look here. There's one restaurant in the Fulham Road where the customers order shish kebabs served on a flaming sword just so they can see to eat the rest of their food. You're shown to your table by an usherette with a torch. And the person who ordered the black caviar on Easter Monday hasn't found it yet. Though that isn't as romantic or dramatic as all those tales of illicit drink produced up in the mountains from illicit stills. Miss Julie Felix with the recipe.
Get you a copper kettle, get you a copper coil, fill it with new-made corn mash, and nevermore you'll toil. Just lie there by the juniper while the moon is bright. Watch those jugs a-filling in the pale moonlight. Build your fire of hickory, hickory, oak and ash. Don't use no green nor rotten wood, they'll catch you by the smoke. Just lie there by the juniper while the moon is bright. Watch those jugs a-filling in the pale moonlight. My daddy, he made whiskey. My granddaddy, he did too. We ain't paid no whiskey tax since 1792. Just lie there by the juniper while the moon is bright. Watch those jugs a-filling in the pale moonlight.
So with food today, when the British Travel and Holidays Association boasts of English cooking as the best in the world, it means that our Indian, Chinese, Italian and French restaurants are as good as any you'll find anywhere. Another Arabian restaurant opened in the city last week, and we're influenced by other countries too, by Sweden, where all the delicacies are tasty, where you can have as much as you like, whenever you like, and then ask for more. It's much the same with food. common market joke. Gastronomes like explorers seem to push further and further afield in their search for the Valhalla of cuisine. Any day now we can expect Robert Carrier to come staggering out of a tent on the South Pole and bravely wander into the blizzard because there's only enough penguin à l'orange for three. Or Egan Rone returning from a tour of darkest Africa with news of an offbeat Swahili bistro where the speciality of the house is Raymond Postgate. And what is Britain's current role? Britain's current role is delicious. Try some today. Though, of course, even in the best restaurants, you may find yourself sharing a table with someone you may never have met before.
Your glass of water, sir.
Thank you very much.
Enjoying your steak, are you?
Yes, yeah, thank you very much.
The Hindu, you know, will not eat the cow. Sacred animal the cow is to a Hindu.
So I believe.
Now take your Arab, on the other hand. He sets great store by a repast of sheep's eyeballs. It's like a king's banquet to an Arab, a sheep's eyeball.
Please, I'm eating.
The Chinese eat pussycats. Covered all over in melted chocolate. It's a well-known fact.
I don't care and I'm not interested.
And monkeys. The monkeys' brains, you know. There's nothing John Chinaman likes quite so much as to get his choppers into a steaming plate of monkeys' brains.
Look, it's not a very pleasant topic for the dinner table.
And yet the Hindu will not eat the cow. It's a strange old world.
Very strange.
Well, some people won't eat meat at all, you know. It's very difficult if you're sensitive like me. If you can imagine that steak loping across a field mooing. It does tend to put you off. Gone off it, have you?
Yes.
Just going to eat the vegetables, are you?
Yes.
Vegetables have nervous systems too, you know. Scientists have recorded their screams of agony as they're torn out of the ground by their roots. Carrots shriek. That's a carrot shrieking. Of course, I've never heard it myself. You have to have the equipment. Probably cost thousands of pounds. I'm improvising.
Well, don't.
Oh. Oh. It's a broad beam being slipped.
Look, for goodness.
Oh, 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 oh. That's a bunch of radishes in extremis. Death rattle of a stick of celery. A potato. A turnip.
There you are, sir.
Oh, thank you.
That's food, really, though there is one other side to all this foreign influence, and that's the American part of the new look. On all sides, there are automatic machines. A drunk at Victoria recently put 9 separate shillings into a vending machine and got out 9 pies. He refused to let anyone else near the machine as he said he was on a winning streak. What is food coming to? I mean, you can buy plastic lemons full of lemon juice. What's wrong with lemons? If you look at the ingredients of a sliced white loaf, 50% of them are also in the cellophane it's wrapped in. Artificial plastic food on all sides. And in the last few days, it's even seemed as though we weren't going to have enough of that, thanks to the seamen strike and all the resulting shortages. However, it's all right. The good Mr. Wilson today completed his new plan for feeding the country. He's asked for 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes.